The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, we're back again, lads. Myself, Shane Stapleton, Declan Maron, how are you doing?
How's it going?
Good stuff from Ladbrokes. Bernard Flynn from The Mirror, are you well?
Shane, good to see you.
And we have Ian Doyle from the Liverpool Echo on the phone. No better place to start than the Champions League final, Ian. You're heading over to Kiev. Where's confidence at?
Well, confidence is high, I thought.
Really?
I thought Liverpool got a very good chance to win, yeah. I think they have to, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're against a team that's looking to win the first three in a row since, I think, the 70s. Was it the Ajax team? And maybe Bayern Munich as well. I mean, they're looking for 4 and 5 years here, Ronaldo and co. You got to be somewhat worried.
Well, I think worried is the wrong word. I think respectful is probably the word. I mean, let's face it, Real Madrid are within one game of being, you could argue, the best club team ever, and certainly in Europe. The achievement that they would do if they win that European Cup, it's that 13th, three in a row, 4 out of 5. But they won't have come up against a team like Liverpool before. You look at Mohamed Salah, Roberto Firmino, Sadio Mane. That's just three players. They're the three front men, but it's the whole team. They've been playing with such motivation, such confidence in the Champions League this season that they'll feel they can take on anybody.
And are you getting much of a vibe about what the starting team will be?
I think we know what the starting team is going to be. I think that's the one thing that we probably do know. Due to injuries, we know that it'll be Karius will be in goal. Trent Alexander-Arnold will be on the right. Lovren and Van Dijk will be the centre-backs. Robertson on the left. Midfield will be Milner, Wijnaldum, and Henderson up front will be those three. Firmino, Salah and Mane. That's provided nobody gets injured in the meantime.
Just having a quick look at the betting here. Real Madrid are 6-5. The draw is 27-10. And Liverpool are 2-1. That's the match betting as it stands. Ian, I wonder what you think about some of the maybe speculation around Real Madrid's defence and Liverpool's ability to maybe take advantage of that. It seems a little bit mad, really, when you're talking about the likes of Carvajal and Ramos are going to be in there. Two of the best defenders in the world. I think Marcelo has pointed out as maybe a potential weak link for a lot of people, but Juve and Bayern haven't been able to exploit that. I'm not sure if you're very confident Liverpool will be able to.
Well, I mean, Bayern Munich scored 3 goals over 2 games. I think Tottenham scored 5 in 2 games in the group stage, and even Juventus scored 3 at the Bernabeu. So the Real Madrid defence can be got at. I think it'll be a big surprise if Liverpool don't score, but by the same token, it'll be a big surprise if Real Madrid don't score. It just has that feeling it's going to be one of those games where, funnily enough, the defence that plays the best will probably win the game for all those attacking players on display.
Ian, when you think back on 2005, that title kind of came out of nowhere, and there was the Olympiacos game as well on the way. Do you think this will be a bigger achievement than 2005 if Liverpool pull it off?
It's a strange one, really, because I think European teams as a whole are better now than they were in 2005. And I think Liverpool's team now is, you'd have to say, is better overall than the team in 2005 if they don't really have a kind of a Steven Gerrard type figure, you know, Jamie Carragher as well. But Liverpool's team now is better. Would it be a better achievement? It's a tough one to say, really, because that Liverpool team then struggled to finish in the top four. They ended up finishing fifth. This Liverpool team, I think if they hadn't have got as far as they did in the Champions League, could have easily finished second to Manchester City. I mean, nobody was stopping City this year. I think the surprise has come from the way that they beat City in that quarterfinal. They didn't just beat them, they destroyed them. And I think from that point on, with the teams that were left in the competition, I think Liverpool thought, if Liverpool win, I don't think it would be seen as a massive surprise.
What do you think about the idea of a lack of game time for Liverpool? Real Madrid have obviously played plenty of games in the last couple of weeks as their league season peters out. Liverpool, I think the idea of a lack of game time for them is a bit ridiculous. I can only imagine a Klopp training session is fairly intense.
I mean, that's it. I mean, I know Jurgen Klopp got to the final with Borussia Dortmund 5 years ago, and he said that the problem he had then, there was only 1 week between the last league game to the final, but he's had 2 weeks this time, and he said it's the perfect preparation, the best thing that could have happened to him. And also because of the injuries that we mentioned, Liverpool are down basically to 11 first-choice players, so the last thing they wanted was to be playing more games. They just wanted to get the players ready to any knocks, get rid of them, and even maybe have Adam Lallana and Emre Can on the bench.
Like, where's the confidence with Klopp? I mean, there's a couple of factors at play here. Like, winning finals hasn't been something that he's been brilliant at, and we know he won that cup final with Borussia Dortmund. I think that was even on penalties. But then you look at the semi-final and you think, like, how cohesive the team was. So the example I'd look at is that Oxlade-Chamberlain went off injured, and he's been playing brilliantly and scoring goals, and Wijnaldum comes straight in, and there's no issue at all. He just clicks straight back into gear. So like from that point of view, is there supreme confidence in Klopp here, or is there a little worry about his record in finals?
I think the players have got confidence in the manager. I think the fans have got confidence in the manager. And I think that that's the only way they could possibly have got this far in the competition, is they all believe in each other. I think even the players who haven't been playing there, as you mentioned, then Wijnaldum was on the bench, I think it was against City where he came on and he improved things. Roma, he improved things in that semi-final. I just think that all of the players know what their job is, what they have to do, and what everybody else does as well. And that all comes from the manager and his coaching staff preparing them properly, which has got them to this point.
If you were to have a punt on this, what would you be going for?
We'll be going for 0-0, that's for sure. it's a tough one. I mean, I think it probably got to extra time. If it's 2-2 at the end of 90 minutes, I wouldn't be surprised. And once you get to the thing about Liverpool is that they can just, in 20 minutes, they can just take a game away from anybody. You saw that against Roma in the semi-final. You saw that against City in the quarter-final. You saw that against City in the league, actually. But Real Madrid have got this guy up front called Ronaldo, and he's just capable of just pulling something out of the top. And so can Gareth Bale. They've got these players who, even when Real Madrid aren't playing well, they can conjure something out of nothing. And I think if Liverpool are going to win, they would have to play very well. But Real Madrid could conceivably win without playing particularly well. And answer to your question, I'm going to go with Liverpool. Liverpool to win 3-2.
Liverpool to win 3-2. I'll have to find a price for that just handy. Just as you mentioned, the extra time markets, you've got Real Madrid about 9-1 or Liverpool 11-1. So really big prices if you do fancy it to go to quite that big a score. Your selection of Liverpool 3-2, as I just wait for it to load here, fairly big price as well, about 20-1.
Wow.
I mean, there's going to be goals. There will be goals. And I think that's the one guarantee. I think it'll be a great game.
Ian, just a question, Bernard here speaking. Liverpool must be gone absolutely nuts over there. To be in a European Cup final, you know what they think of the team, their soccer, the city, they love it. Has he kept that away from them? The last time I think they've done that very, very, very well. Is it the hype gone beyond crazy levels, or is it fairly low-key? What is the feeling in Liverpool at the moment right now?
Oh, in Liverpool and the City, it's just got absolutely mental.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's Everton there as well, who were trying to put their heads down and forget it's even happening.
You're breaking up there, Ian. Yeah, you were just
breaking up. Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Look, I suppose on that one, we'll let you go there, because I know you're probably under the gun with deadlines and stuff like that. So thanks very much for that, Ian, from the Liverpool Echo.
Okay, no, thank you. Thank you.
All the best. Declan, where's the value here?
Two offers for this one in our Republic and Northern Ireland shops. We're going to go double odds once again if your player scores inside 15 minutes on your first goal score bets. And also, if you bet on the coupons, bet £20 on the coupons in shop, get a £5 bet station bet free as well. So, yeah, we talked a little bit to Ian there about the options. I actually think this is a game that there's just bundles of value in right around. I think everyone knows it could go one way or the other. But if you're focusing maybe not on who's going to win it, and just for some high-scoring markets, you heard Ian mention 3-2 there. You've got something like this that stood out for me. Ronaldo to score in both halves, out to 7-1. Big old price.
I wouldn't touch that.
No,
with
really.
With bad money. No,
no. No. What about, well, let me see if I can find one for you. Both teams to score in both halves at 7-1.
No.
That's
no.
A better bet.
Still, not for me.
Still not for you. What about, right, I have one more here for you. Firmino to score and Liverpool to lose, 10-1.
No.
Still.
No good.
Just
no
a
good.
Nil-nil.
Just a point for you, lads. Just think how big a game this is for Klopp himself. It's huge for his career.
Specialist in failure.
But Zidane, I think Zidane has had a lot of luck. I mean, if you look at the league itself, when he's been found wanting a little bit, but the big players over the big games over the last couple of years have got him out of a hole. So if Klopp can really do his stuff as a manager in these couple of weeks, it could be monumental for his career, not alone Liverpool.
I think that's very harsh. I think Zidane gets a lot of stick for this kind of thing. He just knows how to manage big players. They clearly had a nuts and bolts man with Benitez before. Zidane is the opposite, but Zidane is, you know, same way that Fergie was. He just goes in and commands respect and goes right, go out and
play.
He's
a superstar without being a manager anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
But do you see all the the photographs that I've watched on social media of their training sessions, every one of them has Klopp with his arm around a player, hugging, touching, feeling.
Bit much for me, actually. No.
Yeah, but I think he's doing it. It's, you know, it's a strategy. Yeah. It'll either work or it'll fail. Dismally.
What insight there from Bernard. Real Madrid to win, both teams to score 12-5.
That's the bet.
No.
That's
the way with your 7-1s over there.
I'll give you one more. If you just for Liverpool fans, if you are going to back Liverpool, yeah. They're 2-1 for the match. I don't see the point in backing Liverpool 2-1 if you can back Liverpool both teams to score at 7-2 if you are just going for the match bet. That's because true. They're going to concede.
No, you're talking sense again. Jeez, we have you back.
Just say that one again.
That's Liverpool to win both teams to score out to 7-2.
Excellent.
Not bad.
Excellent.
Lads, we'll have a quick look at the Championship playoff final. Obviously it's at Wembley. Villa and Fulham looking to join Wolves and Cardiff in the Premier League. We all know it's the richest game in football, and I was looking into the stats of that. So the winners will benefit from future additional revenue of approximately $170 million over the next 3 seasons, and that could rise to in excess of $280 million if they survive the first season in the Premier League. That's incredible.
I get so bored listening to the Sky Sports and all that bash out the money talk. I just enjoy the game.
Jesus,
Sky Sports is totally about money.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
But you're here with two lads of the GA who know it's really about the heart and the passion of the game. Where's that talk?
Well, that was the Sky come in.
Yeah.
What about Conor Hourihan, by the way? An Irishman, and he's had a few goals this season as well. I mean, not that Martin O'Neill would be interested in that from the fielder, but you know,
a lot of money went on Villa. When they were mid-table, going back a few months.
Yeah.
A lot of money. I think they were around 7-8-1 at one stage there around mid-table. Great bet. I think the experience, Terry, the likes of Terry now, could make a huge difference on Bruce being there before. I think they'll hang on and just sneak it.
Villa are 23-10 to win the game, 21-10 for the draw, 13-10 about Fulham. I thought it was an interesting price, about 9-2 for either team to win an extra time, because the championship does tend to run into extra time.
What was the price on that?
9-2.
Yeah, it's the same for penalties.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting little price, just I could see it running along, but I think you're bang on there. I think as much as actually I find there's a couple of quite dislikable characters amongst the Aston Villa team.
Grealish is playing really, really well.
Jumping straight in.
I knew exactly what you were talking about. The guy who loves himself. But he is delivering a little bit more now. Mm. Yeah. He has talent.
I think the one thing that's a problem for Fulham as well is they just look like they're a team that are starting to come together, but still quite a lot of young players and sort of players that haven't been there too long together.
You could watch Ryan Sessegnon on all day. Yeah, he's absolutely great at stuff. But just with Terry, he has a great record at Wembley in major cup competitions. He's won 8 of his 9 games there with Chelsea, including the last 7 in a row. But there's a striker going to be playing in this game, lads, and I'm going to ask you to guess who it is. He actually has scored, only Mohamed Salah has scored more league goals than this player since his Fulham debut on February the 3rd. Who is it?
Is it Alexander Mitrovic?
Oh, it is,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah,
yeah, he has scored in 10 of Fulham's 14 games this season, like 12 goals in that.
7-2 to get the first goal here. And once again, we're doubling odds if your player scores inside 15 minutes.
He's a bit of a brute now.
I tell you,
him knocking off Terry will be very good. I'll tell you one thing. kicking lumps out of each other.
Hopping off each other. Mm. Right, lads, we also have a bit of Pro 14. We're going to do the racing and we'll horse into the GA as well. I think we should go to the Pro 14 first. Leinster against Scarlets. And poor old Scarlets, some of their players missed training on Monday and Tuesday because they got Rugburn at Scotsoon in their last game.
Just say that again, Shane.
Rugburn.
That's like,
I mean, I'm minimizing what actually happened. So, like,
the
artificial pitch, you know, they got some scrapes and the poor old devils. Did you ever play in Gaelic Park in New York?
I did.
It's pure manky artificial turf. It's real low grade rubber in it. And if you actually slide and cut your leg, you have to get an antiseptic put in your.
Well, Shane, when I played in it, the pitch wasn't the problem. It was the lunatics you were up against on the field. It was a war zone.
They said the same
in the 80s. It really was. I lasted 8 minutes in a final over there. I played a quarterfinal, semi final, flown out, kept there, got a nice shoe bob for it. And this dirty bee marked me for 8 minutes and bet the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And I turned around and I flattened him with the best box I've ever hit anybody. And I lasted 8 minutes in New York in the final.
You got the red.
Got the red.
Yeah. I'd say you're happy enough, you know, looking
no,
back.
I was embarrassed
he deserved
with the money that they actually paid to keep me. I lasted 8 minutes.
And had they paid you up front?
Yes.
Lovely. Yes. Lovely stuff.
But that was my, and it was mad, the fighting and the hitting, the belting out there. It has changed and the pitch has changed.
The pitch is still scandalous. Well, I was played there in 2010, a bit of hurling, and it was 13-a-side. Jeez, I remember one game we played against. I was playing for the Tip New York team against the Galway New York team, I suppose. And just before, like, I'd gone drinking heavy on the Friday, went in heavy now up to White Plains. I'm sure plenty of people.
We didn't do any of that.
Oh, yes, you did. So this game was on the Sunday morning, and it was like 100 degree heat, and because of the rubber on the pitch, you can feel the heat coming up through your boots. And it's terrible. Like, it's really awful. And I was so hungover. And just before half time, I called to the manager, who's John Madden, who's the current selector with the Tipperary Senior Hurlers. And I said, I got to come off here. I'm absolutely you know, I'm so hungover. So he was like, you know, panicking, and it was like 2 minutes to go in the half.
Very disrespectful, Shane.
I know, terrible. So I went walking off to the sideline as if I'm done. So I went walking off to the sideline. The other team took a free, hit it straight to my lad, and he scored a goal as I'm walking off on the field because the sub wasn't even ready to come on for me. Disgraceful from me.
At least you never turned into the podcast in such a state either.
Yeah. Okay, lads.
That's a great rugby preview there.
I know, yeah. But anyway.
The game you love so much.
The game I love. So it's Leinster against Scarlets at the Aviva. Leinster's last two wins, the cup final over Racing 92 and the Pro 14 semi-final against Munster, both very dour. Mm. What sort of prices are we looking
at? I didn't actually think the Munster game was too dour. I just didn't think it was high scoring.
Right.
It was a good, it was a good couple of...
The bookies got it wrong last week. We said it strongly.
I got it very wrong, I must say. I think it's a bit of indication. I think it's bigger. I think there's a bit of indication that Leinster maybe are slowing down because they're in their peak against Scarlets in the first game. In the European semi-final where they absolutely trashed them. They smashed a couple of tries. I think it was four or five tries. I can't remember past them. And you can kind of see maybe they're just coming to a little bit of a slow stop and start now in a couple of the games. That being said, Nasewa Sexton, Dan Levy, Rob Kearney, who have all been rested for the last game, all coming back in. And they're four big pillars for the team. Really, really important this year. So Leinster, I mean, looking at the betting, they're 2-9. Very, very short. 25 to 1, the draw, and 7 to 2 about Scarlets. The handicap is 10 points, so you get Leinster minus 10 at evens, Scarlets plus 10 at evens. I think if you're looking along the lines of a Leinster win here, Leinster to win between 1 to 10 points, you'll get 2 to 1 about.
I have 1 to 12, 15 to 8. Mm. That's not bad either.
No.
It's just slightly worse.
Yeah, well, just when you're talking about the match betting being so short. Mm. And even, I had a quick look there, I could see Leinster kicking on maybe by just about a try. Leinster by 6 to 10 is at about 7 to 2, which isn't a bad price either. Just got try score prices in as well. Mm. I should mention double odds on first try score bets if your player goes on to score a second try. And again, with that in mind, I mean, I tipped up James Lowe last week and I was absolutely sick.
Man of the match.
Yeah, I absolutely stormed in on him and he offloaded for the only try of the game as he was stumbling towards the line. It must have been about another yard to go and he offloaded. Absolutely sick. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him go nicely here again. He's a bit of value, I'd say about 9-1 again, if I can see him there correctly. And just thinking back to the last game against Scarlets, it wasn't really the wide players threatening Scarlets as much. It was the big boys absolutely thundering through. So you might get a bit of value looking at someone like, I'm not sure if Henshaw's back, but he's about 20-1.
No, he's injured.
Is he? Right. Well, someone like Tadhg Furlong, they don't come bigger than that. He's about 40-1. So just mauling it over the line could be the way to go.
He's a big baby. He's a big baby.
This is where they actually, I think Leinster, big games like this, big players, in fairness to them, they do deliver. In a big pressurised situation, I mean, 1-12. Shane, you said 15-8. I think that's a fantastic bet. Mm. I cannot see Scarlets winning this. Leinster for another trophy to do the double.
Mm, and John Barkley's out, and they were already blown away in the breakdown the last day. So, yeah, they're up against it. Will we quickly look at the racing then, and then finish off with the GA for dessert because we really want to sink our teeth into that. Talk to us about the 2,000 guineas on Saturday, 4:10 at the Curragh.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'll get the prices up here now.
Well, Aidan O'Brien is looking to win it for the 12th time anyway, and he has 5 of the 14.
At the top of the betting, then, we've got Eller Cam, 7-4. Then US Navy Flag, 11-4. Gustav Klimt has drifted most of the week, actually, 130. Zeba's in there at 7. Symbolization is at 14s, and it's 18s or bigger the rest. I think this weekend, actually, at the Curragh is going to be one for the Favs. I can imagine a lot of people piling in. And with that in mind, for our Republic of Ireland chops, best odds guaranteed for your multiple bets, 12-2. Because I could see, we'll talk about a few Favs later on, but I could see Eller Cam definitely being coupled up with a few Favs this weekend. Probably needs a little bit more experience. He didn't look completely confident last time, but they're very, very confident, the connections of how Eller Cam would run. So if he improves, he should be a serious prospect. Just a few. I mean, Gustav Klimt's drifting in the betting. You'd be a little bit worried. I think there's room to take on US Navy Flag despite Aidan O'Brien's dominance in this. He's been out of the frame in the French guineas. And O'Brien even talking about him, horse that looked that took a bit of racing last year. And just doubts that he gets a mile even here as well. So I think there's loads of reasons to maybe take on a few at the top, maybe bar Eller Cam. For me, just Would Be King is an interesting each-way prospect here. He wasn't really miles off Gustav Klimt last time they met here, and he generally tends to run into a place against classy enough opponents. He's about 18-1 with Ladbrokes at the moment.
Mm. And the Gold Cup, the Tattersalls Gold Cup, then Sunday at 2:25?
Yeah, onto the Gold Cup. So you've got, once again, Aidan O'Brien's going to be very, very competitive here.
He hasn't won it since 2012, though.
He hasn't. That's the thing. Now, he has a great chance, to be fair. This looks like a lovely sort of match bet between two. Cliffs of Moher, 5-4 in the betting. And then Defoe is in there at 6-4. Again, a bit further down the betting, you've got Hydrangea at 7s, Eminent 8s, Yucatan 9s, 16-1 or bigger. The rest. Cliffs of Moher has been a bit of an uneasy fav. He got back to winning ways at Nace. I'm sure punters, after being stung by him a couple of times, won't be too keen. I could see him drifting, actually, on the day, just as he's been a little bit unreliable. For me, Defoe probably wants a bit further, but he's the informed pick here. And at the top of the betting, he's probably the one I'd be lining in with. I do think there's a bit of value with Hydrangea. I know he's the arc in mind, so she probably wouldn't have worked too hard earlier in the season, so we might be still waiting to see her best. But I mean, winning return to last year's Guinea Trials at Leopardstown as well, beating Winter, it was a real class act by a neck, and a couple of string of classy performances as well, beating Batil over in France last time we saw her. So just maybe going with class on this one. If one or two are questionable at the top of the betting and you still fancy Aidan O'Brien to win it, Hydrangea for me is probably the one to fall in with here.
And finally, the 1,000 guineas on Sunday also occur at the 410. Happily is the current market leader by the looks of it.
Yeah, Happily wins this for me. It's a very, very straightforward contest. That's why we're talking on the multiples. I can see Alarcam and Happily being linked up quite a lot, actually. I imagine that'll be one for the bookies to be sort of worried about on the weekend. But I mean, there's a few in here. Happily at 5-4, Soliloquy 11-2, Clemmy 4-1, then Soliloquy 11-2, Lawrence at 7s, Who's Steph at 8s, and it's about 12s or bigger. The rest, just one or two, trying to find a little bit of value in this, because I do think Happily just dominates. You've got Clemmy in here, and Aidan O'Brien has already said on her that he'd be happy enough if she runs near the top 5, so you can't really be too hopeful of her prospects. There's one or two in here. Lightning Quick looks an exciting prospect. He won a decent Leopardstown Maiden and a Group 3 at Nace. Big step up, but interesting if he can run into a place. And one that's a really nice filly, actually. He talked quite a bit about I Can Fly by Aidan O'Brien. Looked good last year, ran third in a group race at Newmarket, and then wasn't miles off Who's Steph at Leopardstown in a Group 3. Nowhere near it last time at Newmarket in her first taste of a Group 1 company, but I wouldn't be too surprised to see this one coming on a bit time and time again. About 20s at the moment if you fancy an each way price, or at least just watch out and see where she goes going forward.
Okay, that's the racing. So we're going to go for the GAA next, and there's actually a huge amount of games on this weekend. I think 12, I'll have to double check that, but I think there's 12 games on this weekend between the hurling and the football. We'll start off with the football, and Corker against Tipperary in the Munster semi-final on Saturday night. Tip had to play last weekend. I was down at it to see them coast through Waterford, who are, you know, not at the same level, and Tip aren't exactly an All-Ireland challenger, but they might be among that chasing peloton after that. Conor Sweeney didn't play. I think his fitness is key here, because if himself and Michael Quinlivan are up front, I don't think Cork have that firepower.
I looked at the Cork team. There's only one debutant. You've probably seen that there, Shane. I'm going down to cover, actually doing the match, working down there, so I'll be down looking forward to this game. I think it's probably the game of the weekend. I think Liam Kearns, his outburst and the way they were treated, the 6-day turnaround. If Sweeney and probably Stephen O'Brien were both fit and there was no injuries, you wouldn't hear a word. You cannot put a price on getting 70, 80 minutes under your belt. A game is worth 3 or 4 points to Tipperary. I know they coasted through, but they've won under the belt. This Cork team, they're vulnerable. There's not too many changes. I was surprised that he hasn't went with a bit of new blood. The likes of O'Neill up front, why not hold the likes of him? A few guys. Kerrigan is a sub. I'm not so sure he's going to start there. There's a reason. Some tell me he's actually fully fit and wasn't picked and disappointed. I don't know the true story, but Paul Kerrigan not to play, I don't understand it.
And they have Brian Hurley back on the bench as well. Yeah, he's had a
his career has been
injury.
Horrific altogether. But Chip is one of my outside bets for the Super 8. I really do think if they keep the guys injury free now, Sweeney, I think Sweeney and O'Brien have to have an impact this weekend for them to win. But I think they'll win. They beat them 2 years ago down there, as you know, in a high scoring game.
First win over Cork since 44, was.
And I was covering the game last year, and listen, they were robbed at the very end with a goal. They really were. They should have closed it out. They were naive.
They allowed Cork walk through them and just tap it into
the net. I watched it a few times. That goal should never have been allowed in. When they got the score just before that, the goal. And the likes, I think their half back line is brilliant. I really do.
Oh yeah, Robbie Kiley, Bill Maher and Jimmy Feehan. I mean, there's a lot of football. There's a lot of football in that.
I'd be worried with the line just behind them. They need to protect it a little bit.
Do you know, I think Alan Campbell will probably pick up Colm O'Neill, and watching him the last day, he was out in front of his man a nice bit, and I have to say I was fairly impressed by it. I do think there are a couple of holes in this Tipperary team, and I think there are a few scores to be had for Cork, but...
They need to start well, but...
Yeah.
Cairns, he seems to be a little bit... The guys seem to enjoy it. He's mixed. I was just reading during the week there where he allows them downtime is downtime.
God, it is with those Tip footballers. Yeah.
So you said it last week as well. Looking forward to going down there. I do think Tipperary, if they go for the jugger earlier on, Cork are definitely, the football squad is vulnerable. There's a chink or two there, but if they get the confidence up early on, they could be hard to beat. Tip for me can do it and win by 2 or 3 points. What's the betting, Declan?
Betting here, Tip at evens. The draws at 7-1 and Cork are 11-10. There's only 1 point in the handicap as well.
It's so finely poised, actually, and the odds reflect that.
Big game for Cork. Yeah. Huge game for Cork.
Well, let me put this to you. Aidan Walsh was Young Footballer of the Year in 2010, and he's gone over and back between the hurling and the football and playing Jewel. Do you think how would you evaluate his career at this point?
Brilliant question. I'll tell you, that is a great question because I'm surprised it hasn't come up more often. I think going over and back, as you said, has affected him. He hasn't actually moved on in either code because of that. And I think at that level, it's very, very hard. If you look at Cadigan, the same, I think it's affected his career as well. He's concentrating on one. He hasn't really been the force on the football field that we would have expected. He's very inconsistent in big games. And I tell you, if Tipperary have parity at midfield, the Tipperary forward line fully fit, outside of Dublin, a couple of top teams, even Tipperary probably the best forward line, natural forward line, outside of Dublin on a good day.
We've wristy hurlers and ankly footballers. That's what we have.
Lee McGrath's actually a big addition.
Yeah,
been a big addition.
Yeah, and he scored, I think, it was
9 points last day.
And he scored 2 goals down in Cork and the league earlier this year. That's Michael Quinlivan is 13-2 for the first goal. So have a little nibble on that.
A player.
Ah, he's classy.
But he needs Sweeney. I think he needs Sweeney in beside him there to actually take a little more pressure off him. But they're half back now, midfield of O'Brien and that, and like Jack Kennedy there, they can hit you and hurt you from all over the field. That is huge for Tip.
A couple of extra markets, just if you do think it's going to be a very tight game. I mean, we mentioned Cork 11-10. If you like Cork, draw no bet, you're getting even money. So still a fairly good chance on that one. Draw no bet Tip is 8-11, so a bit shorter. And then similar prices, if you just like Tip to qualify, 8-11 or Cork at even money.
So there are a couple other matches on Saturday night, Down Antrim, Roscommon, Leitrim. But I want to jump forward to Sunday because Longford are playing Meath in Pierce Asbestos Park. Now, Bernard, I think there's a chance Longford could catch you.
There's a chance, a big chance. A couple of things on that, and even from Meade or Longford listening. Longford will give it everything. I think they're primed. Everyone is fit. Mickey Quinn is back, who was missing the last game of the league. They should have qualified. They should have qualified out of Division 3. A bad decision near the end from an Northern referee against, I think it was Fermanagh, cost them. Meade going down there, we've had a lot of defections. The only thing is, from what I can gather, they had a great camp in Carton House. The squad is galvanised with the defections. So what's there is there. Andy McInney said during the week, he said, listen, the guys that are here representing Meade are the guys that want to play with Meade. I'd love to see a few of the guys that are away. I think we've had 16 or 17
who in
defections.
Particular do you think would make the massive difference?
Pádraig Harnan's a massive loss for me there.
Yeah.
The likes of, I do think McKeever, who's left the panel there in recent weeks, Tobin as an impact forward, huge coming on, a big score getter. Young Conlon, Breen Conlon gone. Harry Rooney gone at midfield. There's a lot of guys there. Rory Quillen, Young Jones from Dunboyne there at midfield. He was looking like a revelation. I went to see the Miners on Wednesday night in Navan against Dublin. And the hair stood in the back of my head. I was so proud coming out of Navan. They thumped Dublin. They won by 2. They should have won by 6-7. It was a brilliant game. So there is talent. It's not all doom and gloom. We have to get out of Longford with a win. It will be nothing short of a disaster. I'm very, very wary and apprehensive. But I'd love to see us just get over the line by a point and go in against Dublin and show exactly where we are as a squad. But Shane, you're right. It's going to be the closer it gets. I think we're being primed for an ambush. I hope not.
Yeah, I live with one of the Longford footballers. Well, he's injured at the moment. He probably would have come on as a sub in this game. But I often talk to him about the Longford footballers, and he always goes on about the quality of Robbie Smith and Sean McCormack, for example, and even Francis McGee before that and Brian Kavanagh, so who were no longer on the panel, of course. But who would you say has the better forwards, like, actually available to them this weekend?
I think Meade haven't got, because of the inconsistency, that's what's killing us. Mm. It's killing Meade. But the pace, do not underestimate. I actually think if Meade open up early on, they could win by 4 or 5 points. The pace they possess throughout the team, if confidence isn't rocked early on, they have electrifying, blistering pace, and they actually could destroy Longford with a couple of goals early on. If that happens, that's what I'm hoping. But the longer Longford stay in this game, down the stretch, probably it might eat into the guys' minds. We are limited. We just need to get out there. 1 point win, that's all I want.
You've got Longford 11-5 in the match betting, draw 15-2 and Meath 1-2. There's 2 points in the handicap, so it's Longford +2 at 6-5 or Meath -2 at 5-6 with the tied 15-2.
Yeah, I've Longford +2 there. Longford draw no bet is 2-1 as well. Mm. Don't think that's the worst either.
You're saying though, Bernard, I mean, something like Meath to win both halves, if they started up early, it's about 13-8. So you're getting much bigger than that short price straight in the match betting.
I think it's a bit closer than the bookies actually have it. Yeah. Meath 1-2 is a bit generous.
Yeah. I think so.
It's all about confidence, the squad. The lads are working hard. Things haven't probably went as well. You know, I'd say they're disappointed over the last 2 years with the inconsistency. They're trying to rectify that. I know a lot of work is going in there. There's been a lot of defections. But my worry is Longford are so honest and they will die on that field to give one supreme effort to turn what is, you know, confidence is low enough in the Meade squad. If they can start well, they could actually blitz Longford. They could.
Mm. Okay, well, look, we'll move on to Wicklow against Dublin, not because we're going to spend any great amount of time analysing this. There is zero point in doing that. It's the first time they met in the Championship since 1990. So there was actually a run of five Championship games between 79 and 1990. All five of the games. Now, Wicklow are obviously upset that this one isn't at home. It's in O'More Park. The five times they met between 1979 and 1990, where were they, Bernard?
Where were the games?
Yeah. They were all at a neutral venue.
They were all in... Was it Tullamore?
No, they were all in Newbridge.
A joke.
In St. Connolly's Park.
A tighter pitch would suit the likes of Longford.
Wicklow. That was Wicklow, Dublin. Yeah. And, wow. Yeah. Wow. So, apropos of nothing, there you go. Because I interviewed Pat Baker during the week, who used to play with the team back then.
Great guy.
But
guy.
Just the only reason I bring this game up is Wicklow +22. Is 10-11, and last year Carlo was it 17-9? I think was the score.
Remember they played Laois outside of Croke Park as well.
Yeah, Nolan Park. Yeah,
they got a couple of goals Laois and that, and ran, you know, a bit closer.
No, Dublin could beat
+22. They have to be inside that.
Yeah, I would have thought so. We had a bit of talk in the office during the week about this, and there's always that thing that people throw in, which is Dublin just have the players to come on, all fighting for a place, come on and score points. But I think +22 is very, very big.
It's probably the one game this Dublin squad over the last few years, particularly outside Croke Park, you said Carlo and that there, we looked at the worst performance over the last few years was against what, 19-12 or something against Carlo last year?
I think it was 17-9 or something like that. Whatever it was. But it was a very creditable performance from Carlo.
But Wicklow +22, a bit of value for our listeners. I think there's, you know, Dublin, I think Howard is starting, Pascal is starting as well. They'll be rusty within reason. And I think, you know, does Jim Gavin want to win by 30, 40 points? No. +22, great bet.
Anything to be said for Dublin to win between 13 to 15 points at a bit of a bigger price, around 8-1?
Yeah, it's just trying to be so specific as well. It's tough.
Well, if Jim Gavin, the one thing about him, do you know what actually will happen here?
Well,
if they're well ahead against Wicklow, he'll just empty the bench anyway. And I think he'll try and get a bit of game time. You could see a situation here with Dublin, with all due respect. They're clever. Their whole management of situations is quite superb. I don't think you'll see them doing a number on Wicklow. Mm. You could see them doing a number of Meade and Croke Park in a couple of weeks' time. If Meade did win, that's different. But I think +22, I can't believe that's the handicap.
I know. And there's just one other game. Like, there's Carlo against Kildare as well. We won't touch on that, really. Derry against Donegal as well. Derry are heading for Division 4. Donegal, they got 3 points from Division 1 this year. Declan Bonner reckons that Derry are going to be a lot stronger in the league because they have the Schlock Neil boys back, Sean Leo McGoldrick.
He is like, manager, he'd say that.
Yeah, he would say that. But Derry +5 here, do you give that a chance, or do you think Donegal are going to win it handy?
I think Donegal will win it handy. And I was covering the game against Cavan. The most impressive performance so far in the championship for me. Okay, Monaghan beat Tyrone, etc. Roughly what you'd expect. They were very good in the second half. Donegal were awesome against Cavan. I know it's Cavan.
220, didn't they?
220, 217 from play.
Yeah.
Scores from all over the field, 9 different scorers. I was so impressed with them. They're playing a more offensive line. Ryan McHugh is an out-and-out forward now. The likes of Langan, the likes of Thompson and half-forward line, brilliant. McBrearty back.
Yeah.
Murphy was outstanding. Jamie Brennan inside, excellent. So, and the likes of Bon, yeah, man, I tell you, they've a couple of
Owen Bon Gallagher, is it?
Owen Bon Gallagher, McMenamin. They've guys with blistering pace. Brennan at centre back as well. They can hit you from all over the field. I like the way they're playing. The foot passes now being used a lot more. They're getting the ball forward quicker under Bonner. If they keep it going, they're going to have a serious say. I think they'll win by 7-8 points.
For something like this, I was trying to look at some of the specials we have online. You have something like, because, I mean, Donegal are so short. Score first, lead halftime and win the match. Donegal, Donegal, Donegal at evens.
Okay,
it's probably a bet there.
Take it.
Okay. We'll have a quick look at the hurling so as well. The game that I'm hugely interested in this weekend, of course, I've skin in the game with Cork Tipperary. Tipperary, man, you know yourself. But Galway Kilkenny. This is Galway's first home Leinster Championship game. It's the 11th meeting between the teams since Galway joined the province. They've just one win, which was the Leinster final in 2012. I think Galway could do a right number on Kilkenny here because they're the only bogey team that they have left.
We talked at the start of the year a bit about when Cody would eventually move on. This is probably one of the last chances he has to throw in to throw a spanner in the works of someone else maybe having a period of dominance. Is there anything to be said for that? Is he any chance here at all that he can, you know, maybe throw something into Galway's path, or is it just a case of this is sort of winding down now?
I think I was talking to a couple of people at the game last weekend, you know, off in Kilkenny.
Yeah,
there may just be a realization now that Kilkenny aren't quite as good as maybe the end of the league suggested. 22 wides last week, not that impressive against Offaly. You know, came back very well against Dublin, probably stole it. Big ask. I'm agreeing with you a little bit, Shane, here. What is the betting and the handicap, etc. on Sunday?
Well,
just giving an indication.
Straight match betting is Galway to 15, the draws 9-1, and Kilkenny are 15-8. Galway then minus 3, 11-10. Kilkenny plus 3, 5-6, and the tie is at 10-1. As you said, I think when you start rereading previews of this game and all other games for Kilkenny, and the main thing that's been said in it is their historic dominance, that's when you start to worry for them, when it's not actually analysing the team, it's all about what they've done.
Well,
so
here's my concern for Galway. For Kilkenny, who marks Conor Whelan? Mm. Because, okay, I would imagine that Paul Murphy's going to come back in the team somewhere. Paddy Deegan might go wing back. Someone like Enda Morrissey might drop out of the team. So so you might have Paul Murphy on Whelan. But if he's given enough... Yeah. Then you've Cooney going full forward on Pádraig Walsh, and like Pádraig Walsh didn't have his greatest game against Jason Ford recently. He didn't against Liam Rush either. Then you've got Joey Holden up against maybe Brian Kincannon if he starts as well. And you know what? If I was Galway, I'd be thinking, who can I put in? Maybe I'll put someone different in there. Maybe like Joseph Cooney as well. So I think there are mismatches all over the place here that Galway can really avail of. TJ Reid is going to be relied on massively from Kilkenny. If he's centre forward or in the half forward line, I think Garrod McInerney will man
with him, yeah,
as he did with Austin Gleeson last year. If he goes inside, there's going to be very little change got out of Dahi Burke. So I just think it's going to be so hard for Kilkenny to get the scores. Colin Fennelly might come into the team. He's come off the bench and done well in the last few games. I just think Kilkenny have it all to do here. Like plus 3 at 5-6 isn't bad, but it's a big pitch over there as well. I just think that eventually it's a very machine-like Galway team. Very fine, very nicely balanced. Tipperary aren't a nicely balanced team. We saw that last weekend and we'll talk about that. But there's just a balance and a sort of a metronomic work rate out of this Galway team. I just think that they're going to go half-time, full-time, 11-10. I see the value there. Conor Whelan is 14-1 for Hurler of the Year, by the way.
I should point out this is a double odds game. So if you're winning first goal score, scores inside 20 minutes, you're getting double odds on your first goal score bet. And just one I thought was interesting here as well. While Galway are short enough in the betting, if you go with something like an anytime goal score and Galway to win, so Joe Canning and Galway to win 11-4, or Conor Cooney and Galway to win 12-5, or even you mentioned Conor Whelan and Galway to win 11-4 as well. So just a little bit of value on something like that, maybe.
I think there's a great maturity about this Galway team and the management. You know, they have to take great credit. I think they were priming themselves for this game as the first real big game of intent for them for the championship.
Yeah.
But looking at it and trying to give our listeners a bit of value, for me, and I watch a lot of the hurling, Galway minus 3 at 11-10, I think that's a superb bet. and I think from all over the field they could hurt you. I mean, if TJ Reid and Walter Walsh are held, I think it's curtains and it could be anything.
There's I think that Offaly have done quite well this year, and Ben Keneally, a cornerback, probably hasn't got the amount of coverage he deserves. Jeez, he was unbelievable against Galway the
brilliant
first day.
Player.
But Offaly have Wexford this weekend at O'Connor Park, and I think we can all safely assume that Wexford are probably going to win this game, even though traditionally it might have been quite close. But Wexford -7 at 11-10. I think that Offaly are slowly going to unravel as the season goes on.
I wouldn't touch that.
Pretty thin panel, I would say. You wouldn't touch it.
You'd go the opposite. Offaly +7.
There's one big performance in Offaly under the management.
Kevin Martin.
Yeah, he's done a great job. They have limited resources, Shane. You're spot on. But I think this is the game they have to, and I think they'll need no motivation for Wexford and Davy Fitz coming to town. They have to give a performance with pride, passion, and something to give the Offaly public to really start having a bit of belief. Martin will demand it. I think the likes of Shane Dooley, guys like Bergen, they have to lead from the front, and really, they cannot let this Wexford team walk all over them. Wexford are vulnerable. Very poor for long periods. I think they're a little bit vulnerable. Yeah. I think they've peaked. I don't think there's anything above where they've been at. And, they'll be hard beaten. But if you take, I think Lee Ching is actually, he's not playing as well as he was 6 months ago. There's no question doubt about that. And their half-back line is very, very good. Pacey, guys like that. But I do think there's one big performance. Wexford will win, but I don't think it'll be anything like 7 or 8 points.
I just think that there's a lack of pace in that Offaly forward line. You know, they've a lot of very identical players up there. Strong ball winners, and they can hurl. But I just think, and their midfield is quite good. Shane Kinsella, for example, was very good
very
against
good,
Galway.
Yeah.
Conor McDonald as an anytime goal scorer, and Wexford to win is 11-8. I don't think that's the worst in the world because, if that's if it's a 2 point win, because I think Conor McDonald, he'll get enough delivery in there. Offaly aren't going to play a sweeper. They'll play their half forward line deep.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be like the two sweeper job or anything that you'd expect from like Watford playing a sweeper right on the full back line.
It's tough. I'm trying to find some value in this, but I feel like I'm scrabbling around a bit. I just feel whatever way you can fit in a fairly straightforward Wexford win. Seven's probably a bit more. I'd probably agree with Bernard. I think awfully +7 isn't the worst. I'd be a little bit put off the -7, but anywhere near 5 points might get you through.
Awfully +7.
Yeah. To be honest, I do think that Wexford could kick it out, but I agree with you, Bernard. They're not flying, and when I look back on the league semi-final, Wexford at home to Kilkenny, losing really, really poorly. And I think Lee Chin had the ball in his hand maybe 7 or 8 times in the whole game. And the sweeper, Sean Murphy, had the ball only 9 times. And for a spare man, you need to be on the ball a lot more. I only saw the highlights of the Dublin game, so I'm not going to say a whole lot about
feel
that.
Dublin are a team I feel for. I mean, they put so much work in, but the two games, they should at least have closed out one of those games last weekend.
100%, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Limerick could be the team I feel bad for after you berating them last week, Bernard.
No, I didn't actually. No, that didn't happen. That was all cut out of the show. I think.
You're a good Limerick man. We're going to look quickly at Clare. We'll look at Tipperary in a minute against Cork, but Clare-Waterford is something I want to touch on. The word at the moment is that Austin Gleeson is out. The word is that Pádraic Mahony is out. We know that Shane Bennett has taken the season off already. So that's half of the starting All-Ireland forward line gone. And the most recognisable name up there is probably Brick Walsh, who, as we know, is probably more of a down through the years.
And Mourne,
midfielder and defender. Mourne will be in midfield with Jamie Barron. They do have a lot of quality in the team, but there's no doubt about it. Watford aren't going there with their full hand. What are the prices, Declan?
In the betting, 8-13. Clare, the draw, 9-1. And Waterford, 13-8. And then it's -2. Or it's 2 points, I should say, in the handicap. So Clare, -2 at evens. Waterford, -2 at 10-11. And the tie at 10-1.
Hard to look away from that Clare, -2 at evens. I think that's really good.
I think it's a tough start for Waterford, I think, to come into it. I think the handicap looks bang on. Even though Clare haven't really been clinical enough, have they?
They're not the real deal.
No.
Like, straight up, I'll put my hand up and say, I don't think Clare are the real deal. They've got, as I keep saying, they've only gotten to Croke Park in one season since 2006. That was the All-Ireland year when they fluked in All-Ireland. Yeah, I've called it. You fluked in All-Ireland. Clare fan. Come at me on Twitter at Shane Saint if you disagree. There will be a sweeper for Waterford. We know that. Unless they rip up the script, but you can't just do it overnight. So that means that Clare will also have a sweeper. I would imagine David McInerney will do that as well. He can hurl a lot of ball. He can cover a lot of ground.
I think they're playing a little bit of a high-risk game.
Who, Waterford or
Clare?
Yeah,
Waterford. I mean, if they have a bad start, let's say they lose the first two games, they're under serious. If they lose this one, they're under serious pressure. I'm still can't get my head around, Shane. You're a hurling man.
Good hurling man.
A very good hurling man. But I don't know where they're actually at. The real ambition of the squad. I'm listening to interviews. I was listening to Austin Gleeson. He was talking about McInerney. I know when you referred to earlier on, Man Markham in the final and all that. And Derek McGrath is a great guy. Great hurling man. But is there a realisation that they know they've peaked? And can they better than what they did last year? That means win All-Ireland. I don't think they can with the squad.
They might have missed their chance. I think
they have. And they've missed it, I think, on a couple of occasions. But their bench, I mean, with the way they're going to play all these games, their bench, to me, with those guys missing, is not near strong enough.
But it's amazing. A lot of the Watford lads on the bench are small, nippy guys. And Clare seem to produce little nippy lads by the dozen. Whatever it is with the two counties. Have you not a few six-foot lads?
What are they eating down in Munster?
I don't know.
I'm trying to scrap around again for a bit of value on this, because it's one of those sort of unpredictable games, I feel. You couldn't call it straight up the same way we were maybe all a bit more confident about Galway. I'm looking at something like, if Waterford were to win, they wouldn't run away with it, I don't think. Waterford 1-3 is about 4-1. Otherwise, I'd probably be happy enough taking Clare in the handicap at -2.
Yeah, I just can't touch Waterford. If Waterford had their full team out here, I would back Waterford to win, because, as I said, I don't necessarily
provided those injuries are through, we don't know.
Yeah, well, that is the thing.
It's a
huge thing. Yeah, if you see the team has been named and the two boys are in it, all bets are off.
Discount what we just said.
Yeah, just forget
honestly,
it.
Honestly, it is that big with those guys missing.
And if it stayed at Waterford +2, if those two boys were playing, geez, jump all over that. That's some sweet action there if you can get that. We'll look at Tipperary versus Cork now, just for dessert. Tipperary, oh my God, against Limerick. And you know, I'm there watching it as a Tipperary. You know, I mean, I'm obviously working at the game, covering the game. But while the game is on, you know, you're pucking every ball, you're throwing in every shoulder. It was so tough to watch because
you've been fairly critical. I was looking at a few things this week. You were very honest, I thought, but quite critical of Tipperary since the game.
Yeah, well, look, I've been very critical since the league final as well, and even the league semi-final, my concern, like, so I would have done articles and different things analysing how Tipperary play and my fears, and every fear I had came through. They didn't protect the full back line, so Donagh Maher had, you know, a woeful time in there. He was targeted. Alan Flynn, not an amazing game, but not bad. Seamus Kendi, I think, did okay, but not a natural fullback. Hasn't played there for Tip before, so there's an element of you always have to mind the square. And we saw with Barry Murphy's goal late on for Limerick that a puck out dropped where the fullback was supposed to be, and he had went following his man. And there's, you know, you have to know when to stay and when to go. I don't blame Seamus Kendi because he's played midfield all league.
But was it a case of, and when I seen the team actually picked, I was pretty surprised. Were the team themselves spooked by the actual 15 that was picked? Was there an element of that?
I wouldn't rule that out, because when I went down to, like I mentioned earlier in the pod, that I was down at Tipperary against Waterford in the football the other night, and that was the night beforehand. And the talk in the stadium was all about, did you see the team? And everybody is just talking about this team. So that's got to filter through to the squad as well. Can you imagine the team is named and you're one of the players and you go home and everyone says, what's the story with the team? But like, that's got to spook you.
Exactly, but I've met Michael Ryan, a fine fella, Michael Ryan, over the years. I've met him a number of times. What's your reading of the media ban? I couldn't believe
ridiculous
that Tipperary did this, or Michael Ryan. Did something happen, or why did that take place, in your honest opinion?
I think you can only try and read between the lines here. I think after the league final, there was a big fallout. Tip managed 1 point from play in the second half of the league final. Hammered by...
five last week?
Yeah. Hammered, as far as I was concerned, hammered by Kilkenny in the league final second half, even though the scoreline may not have reflected that. And I think he had decided before the match that he wasn't going to talk to the media, because a Tip star journalist showed me a text whereby he got a bit of a tip off from someone else that this was going to happen. And I just thought to myself, you're just putting more fuel on the fire here, because if you come out and you lose, you can sort of, you know, kind of direct the narrative a little bit
control what the story is going
to
be
to some degree.
Suppose, yeah.
Like, there's going to be criticism, mm-hmm, and rightly so. You've got the best players in the country, and I mean including Galway. He has the best players in the country, but he's not protecting the full back line. He's not setting up in such a way that there's space in the forwards and that you're choking up your own defence in a good way. He's allowing it the other way all the time, and teams are open in Tipperary up at the moment.
I think there's something to that as well, because I mean, reading in the media any criticisms of Tipperary, it's really, really widespread now. It's not maybe concentrated on one or two issues like you mentioned. I mean, they were talking about defence or attack or not working hard enough or inexperienced lads, or, you know what I mean, as opposed to maybe controlling that a bit more. It seems to be everything has gone wrong now, according to the media.
Well, as well, during the club month, the week after the league final, the players went back to the club. But every week after that, during April and leading into the opener, he had them 2 weeks, or two times a week. So I think that the players were possibly pushed too hard because, you know, they'd have a hard club match on a Saturday, then training hard on a Tuesday and Thursday. And there's a couple of players that are injured at this point, and I wonder, is that anything to do with it? Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right.
Callanan, his fitness looks quite off the mark at the moment.
Well, he's been out with a back injury for a long time, so, you know, you give him a bit of a pass.
I just worry, 5 points from the entire forward line from play, that if that happened in a football match with a Tipperary football team, you'd be worried. But I still think don't write Tipperary off yet at your peril.
Yeah, I mean, the puckouts are an issue. Oh, Tip are just getting destroyed on the puckouts because they're not sitting the half forward line in midfield back, and that protects the defence. But what Nicky Quaid was able to do, the Limerick goalkeeper, was his half forward line would all just walk right into the middle of the field, meaning there was huge space at the flanks. He was actually able to hit his corner forwards, bounce the ball in front of the corner forwards. And Tip had a problem with that against Cork last year, and they may do again. If Tipperary do a bit of work on the tactics board this week, I think that can be worth 4 or 5 points.
It's a big game.
They've better hurlers than Cork. As far as I'm concerned, I think they've better hurlers than Cork.
Myler seems to have got galvanised and really got a good spirit within this Cork squad.
Now he's got
take a bit of beating.
He's got a great forward line too. If you think of Harnedy, Lahan and Horgan, I think Cork have got a great chance here as well. Cork plus two is evens. I think that's ridiculous value.
Yeah, match betting here. Tip 8-13, the draw 9-1, and Cork 13-8. Then you've got Tip minus two, 10-11, Cork plus two at evens, and the draw at 10-1. As you said, it's another one maybe that's a little bit unpredictable. Could really go anyway. I think Cork plus two at evens isn't a bad bet, actually, if there are as many problems as they're suggesting. You maybe think that a tweak or two on the tactics might fix quite a few of that. But
if you get a bit of just a bit of momentum during the game, I think Tip are capable of hammering anybody, but they're capable of imploding against anyone as well. So, yeah, and Cork could build on that win over Clare.
It's another game where we're doubling the odds on your winning first goal score bets if they score inside 20 minutes. So there's really good value, I would have said, on this so many talented players. There's also Patrick Horgan looked sharp enough. I don't know what you thought about that. A good chance in here. He's a bit of value maybe on him at 6-1.
Yeah, he's a great player. Lads, I think that's the hurling more or less. We're going to wrap it up with the bets of the weekend. What's really sticking out to you?
Well, I'm going to try and give a little bit of value this week or something. I'm staying away from the Cork Tip match, by the way. I just think for a bet, for our listeners, it's a little bit dodgy. The three I've picked are, and I think the three may come up, Galway minus three, 11-10 against Kilkenny. I think that's a great bet at home. Donegal, as you said, Declan said it, Donegal, leading at halftime, leading at full-time, evens.
Mm-hmm. That's good, yeah.
Isn't that correct, Declan? Mm-hmm. I think that's a great bet. I really do. Against Derry and Clare, minus two to me. If the injuries that we hear about Waterford's correct, get on Clare at minus two. It's a great bet. Those three for me.
Declan, anything that you particularly fancy?
I think in the Champions League final, you have to go both teams to score in both halves at 7-1. I think it's a way too big a price for a game. You're not even predicting the result. You're just banking on it being a goal fest at a lovely price. And I do think there's something in hydrangea each way. I think I mentioned it, I think it's about 8-1. If it's softened up, it doesn't look like it'll soften up a bit. The car looks like it's actually going to be lovely and sunny, so she maybe won't be ideal for it. But I just think she's such a classy animal. I'll just keep an eye on her. I think she's probably a little bit too big.
Okay. Wicklow plus 22, I think, is good value. Longford plus 2 at 6-5. The Wicklow one is 10-11.
I tell you, for a bit of fun, the Wicklow one is the one, Shane, all right, plus 22.
Yeah. And Conor Whelan, 14-1 for Hurler of the Year. Mightn't be amazing odds, but that's not bad either. No. Lads, I think we've it all said, have we?
Mm-hmm.
We have. Declan Maron, thank you very much. Bernard Flynn.
Cheers, Shane.
We'll chat to you all again next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.